In addition to Congressman Grijalvo, are joined by the person at the Center for Constitutional Rights in Washington, D.C., who is taking on this case, Sunita Patel, staff attorney at CCR. Welcome to Democracy Now! What is the story here, Sunita?
Thank you for having me. First, the story here is that Secure Communities is very similar to 287G and Criminal Alien Program, both of which have been overwhelmingly criticized in the public, in the media, and even by the government itself. What we see in Arizona is a culmination of these types of programs where immigration duties are divested to local law enforcement agencies, and they really must be stopped. Today, we have filed a FOIA lawsuit demanding information and records related to Secure Communities and its relationship to these other programs. Also today, there is the launch of a national coordinated week of action called Uncovering the Truth around local law enforcement and ICE collaboration efforts. There will be events in several cities. I think we're up to 10 or 11 cities with different types of actions, community education events, releases of reports. We really hope that we can raise the profile of these disastrous and dangerous programs.
And can you explain a little more about what the Secure Communities program actually does? How does it further link local law enforcement with federal immigration policy?
Well, what it does is it allows the local law enforcement agencies to check not only the FBI databases, which they've traditionally always done. It also allows them to sync up with immigration databases, which are notoriously unreliable because of errors with data entry, because they just have incorrect information on citizenship status. And so what happens is you have, in the first year, we had 1 million people go through the system. Of those, 5,900 were about 5,900 were U.S. citizens, and there were thousands and thousands of green card holders that were put through the program. And so, what happens is you go through this program, then ICE is contacted, and they may authorize the law enforcement agency to issue what's called a detainer and prevent the release of the individual. And so you have this very broad net being cast, and the program is set to be in every state by 2011 and in every jail by 2013. And even though this is an enormous program, there's very little known publicly about it. There's very little available to all of us. And so that is why CCR and Endelin and Cardozo Law Clinic decided to file suit to get this information. There's an urgent need for information related to this program so that law enforcement agencies and local government officials can make the right choices and make the right decisions about the program.
Let me bring Congressmember Grijalvo back into this in the Capitol Rotunda. Going bigger to federal immigration reform, you pushed hard to include a public option. Progressives did not get any concession there from President Obama. What do you expect to see from him here?
Well, you know, what happened in Arizona should be an urgency, and I want to tell the people at the center that the FOIA request is very important. We've been focused on 287G and the abuses there, and I think this information will be critical to finally analyzing what the real role is with regard to immigration enforcement in the states and in local communities. We have to pass comprehensive immigration reform. We have to undo this law in Arizona. They're linked, but they're not mutual in the sense that one fight and another fight. What I expect is comprehensive reform. And if it continues to be a discussion in which the primary focus is going to be enforcement, security, and no real path to legalization, which is critical to comprehensive reform to deal with the undocumented that are here, then I think we're going to be spinning our wheels. And we're talking about not getting the public option in health care, I think it's a great comparison, Amy, in the sense that if there is no path to legalization that begins to deal with the reality of people here, then I think that we're going to be spinning our wheels. We're going to end up with something that is watered down, that it will not deal with the problem that we're having in Arizona and won't deal with the problem we're having in communities across this nation.
Congressmember Rogahava, thank you very much for joining us from the Capitol Rotunda, co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and Sunita Patel, staff attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights, also joining us from D.C. That does it for today's broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Hunter Gadu, Sarah Mate, Angela Comet, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, Ravi Karan, Mike DeFilippo, Peter Curries, Miguel Nogueira, our engineers. Special thanks also to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Karen Renucci, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant, Samantha Chambly, Jessel Noor, John Gerberg, Vesta Godars. I will be speaking in Eau Claire, Wisconsin on Wednesday night, Thursday night Stanford University, Friday night University of California, Davis. On Saturday, I can't even remember where I'll be. On Saturday, I'll be at in San Francisco, and on Sunday, speaking here in New York City. You can go to our website at democracynow.org for all the details of the tour and our sign up for Twitter there and read our transcripts and go to our video and audio podcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Shrifa Dokkaduce. Thanks for joining us.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you this week, joined by my good friend Kyle in a program that we taped back in January over in Germany.
Thank you. Would you like some wine too?
Oh, I'd love some, yeah. Okay.
Let me pour it for you.
Oh, please, yeah.
I've got a little extra added flourish. I'd
like a little more. That's good, yeah.
I think that's enough for you. All right, put it down. Now, perhaps a toast.
Oh, yeah.
To wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To wine.
Oh, God, yeah.
Good stuff.
Nothing like a good bottle of wine, I always say.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that really was good. Kind of breaks the ice.
It does.
It really
does
gets things going.
Well, here we are. I guess this is an edition of Off the Wall, I think. Right now, we're just in a room.
Yep.
But it's probably going to be on Off the Wall, unless one of the major networks picks it up. I'm here with Kyle, and, here right now is where? Where are we?
We're in Frankfurt, Germany.
Really? Frankfurt?
Yeah. We've ended up in Frankfurt, Germany, yeah.
This is okay. That explains why everyone's speaking German, then. Okay, it's been a whirlwind tour. We've been all over the place. We started, I think, in Paris. Actually, you started before I started. You started in, tell me something about where you were.
Well, I've come full circle. I arrived in Frankfurt, I flew from Seattle to Reykjavik in Iceland, and then from Iceland to here, Frankfurt, which was really nice because I was able to go through customs in Iceland and walk off the plane here in Frankfurt like a regular EU traveler.
So if you go to Iceland, you have a stopover in Iceland.
Yeah.
Well, you can't really leave the terminal. You can't go outside or anything like that, but you go through customs and you're already in the EU?
Correct.
And you get off in Germany and nobody asks you anything.
You don't go through customs, you walk off the plane and you're finding the exit, finding your bags, all that sort of regular stuff, without customs. So it was really quite refreshing.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. At the time, it wasn't so convenient.
I prefer, though, when I arrive here, I have the European passport that I got on eBay, And no, I didn't get it on eBay. I got it.
I was wondering about that.
Got it in real life. But the point is, when you get off the plane, and this is really cool when it happens, you see a massive queue for customs, mm-hmm. and then you see this little sign over in the corner that says EU citizens, mm-hmm. and there's almost nobody on there, and you simply walk through, They look at your passport. They don't even say a word to you. Mm-hmm. Just breeze on through. Everyone else is being interrogated, asked questions. Actually, that's not true, because I've come to Europe many times as an American citizen, and I haven't gotten interrogated once, I don't think.
But this is the next best thing to
that. It
feels
good.
I'd say it was inconvenient getting off in Iceland at the time, because you know they exited everyone off the plane, and then you get back on that very same plane.
Same plane,
and they delayed the flight. They delayed at least three flights, I think, because they wanted to put everyone through security. There were, I believe, five security guards, two X-ray machines, and two customs agents. And you would go through the X-ray machines and the five security guards first, and then the two customs agents. It took an hour and a half, and they delayed every single flight out of Iceland. But everybody, you know, they held them so that nobody missed anything.
Yeah, but I mean, didn't they know that was going to happen? If they're going to go through Iceland, don't they know that they're going to be going through security again, so they should plan adequate time for that?
Yeah, you'd think, but it really, the overwhelming sentiment was people are a little bit aghast. They were a little blown away that, geez, these Icelanders, they're like, you know, in slow motion. They don't care. They're apathetic. It was 7 in the morning. It just felt like... They just were, you know, giving us the runaround, but that's the way they do it there. I think they get the sense that, well, this is the part of the EU that these travelers are going to have to enter into, and no matter what, whether you're going to Frankfurt or any other part of Europe, you must go through customs here, and they run it the way they want.
Wow.
It's kind of interesting. So it was inconvenient at the time, but getting to Frankfurt, you said, you know what? I'm so glad I didn't have to do this in Germany. You know, it was really cool. Every other time I've come to Europe, I've had to go through that.
You had to go through a metal detector when you got off the plane in Iceland?
Yeah. And X-ray machines in Iceland. And then after you get that, and there was a queue of at least, you know, 200, 300, you know, three different flights.
Wow.
You know, just waiting. And you waited like 40 minutes to go through one of two conveyors, and then, you know, maybe... And then whoever goes through, they trickle into one of two customs agents, and then you get back on the same plane, and they had to wait for everybody.
I don't understand why they would X-ray you and do the metal detection as you got off the plane. How could you possibly have anything at that point? You've already been through it.
That was, I think, what added to the absurdity,
mm-hmm.
And the sense that the Icelanders didn't really know what they were doing, or they were kind of, it was overkill, mm-hmm. that whole thing. It didn't seem right, but once you think of it, you know, okay, they are adding a layer of security, and that's actually the you would see various signs and things. That was the explanation given,
mm-hmm.
is that American security is not up to EU standards, so you must go through X-ray machines, metal detectors again, and that's sort of the line we were given. And again, it was inconvenient. 7 in the morning, you felt like, geez, these people are going to make us late. They're going to let this flight leave without us. But no, they got you in. They knew exactly who was at their airport, mm-hmm. and they knew everybody was going to get back on the same plane. And then, you know, they sent the planes on their way when they were done with everyone through their very tiny security department. And it worked. It actually worked. And as I said, it was nice getting to Frankfurt, walking off, just as you described, just like a regular EU citizen. No customs in Germany, nothing. Just
well, you did even
straight
better,
through.
I went through customs, but you went through no customs when you went to Germany.
Not one lick.
Because
I checked
terminal in
the EU. Mm-hmm. I've been stamped in the EU. So any further travel, including my final destination by air, was all through Iceland, and so every other bit of travel has been just very, very easy. In fact, the only problem we encountered was actually the last couple days in the train station when we were stopped by police. That was the first time I'd had anybody in Europe since Iceland check my passport.
Yeah, here in Frankfurt. We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to
a second.
That.
But you saw Iceland for the first time. What did you think of it?
Yeah, it was dark. It was 7 in the morning.
Oh, okay. Well, you're going to see it on the way back.
I'm going to see it on the way back. I will.
Right.
But I've heard a lot of good things about it.
Wait, do you go through U.S. customs then on the way back?
I'm anticipating that I will go through U.S. customs at SeaTac in Seattle.
Oh, in Seattle. Okay, so
yes.
Then going back through Iceland, do they say goodbye to you from Europe in Iceland? Or?
Well, all of the security at Frankfurt is likely going to be up to European EU security standards, so they will not check me again. See, they have this discrimination between the U.S. security standards and EU standards. Now, I had not ever heard of that, and I don't know what the distinction is, but there is one. So leaving Frankfurt, I will be up to EU standards, so I am anticipating that in Iceland I will not receive any sort of secondary screening, and I will not see any sort of customs agents until I get to Seattle.
Interesting. Okay, well, we both have interesting voyages ahead, especially in light of the craziness that happened while we were both away on December 25th. Of course, that knucklehead trying to blow himself up on an airplane with,
yes.
In his underwear or something
yes.
like that. And the reaction to it has been almost equally befuddling because, of course, a lot of security issues were missed. No question about that.
Yeah.
But some of the reactions to it have been really kind of hysterical, you know. A passenger getting into an argument with a flight attendant and the plane turns around and is escorted by military jets back to the airport. Everyone's really nervous on all kinds of I don't know.
If we're thinking of the same story, didn't he lock himself in a bathroom?
That's somebody else.
So that was a different
incident. All these different incidents.
Okay, so it's,
yeah. Somebody
manifesting itself. There's some.
There were two incidents the other day where that plane was turned around, and also there was one where somebody was overheard making inappropriate remarks.
Oh dear.
Yeah, and I don't know what that even means. And I'm sure I've made many inappropriate remarks at various times. What's the most inappropriate remark you've ever heard on air? We can say it now because we're not on an airplane. But
I travel
with a friend, and he always says, you know, I travel with him. I try not to do it very often, but when we're up in the air at a certain point, he always says, if we're going to crash, it's going to be now.
Yeah, I've got friends like that.
Thanks a lot. That's what I need to hear. That's what everybody else needs to hear. Keep your mouth shut already.
Oh, wow. Ugh. Yeah, I know. I've got friends like that, too. And I actually, you know, I'm quite wary of flying until I get in the air and I feel a little bit more comfortable. The worst thing I ever heard, this was not on a plane, but when I was traveling from Paris, I had a friend ask me if she was joking. If she spelled Uzi right on her customs declaration form at Charles de Gaulle, right before presenting it to customs, a week after TWA Flight 800 had blown up.
Wow. Okay, now, side note here, and this is something that I think the folks at home really should hear. Kyle here, good friend Kyle here, was actually on TWA Flight 800 from JFK to Paris. Now, I'm not speaking with a ghost. I'm speaking with a human being here. But my God, how in the world is that possible? What?
It was a class trip, and it was 2 weeks before the actual Flight 800 incident. And
flew the same flight,
same plane, as far as I know. Uh-huh. It was a 747, I believe, and It wasn't a huge route. It was a direct flight, and there probably weren't that many planes doing it. But I can't necessarily verify it. If there's a way, if somebody knows a way to verify if I was, that'd be really interesting to find out. But it's actually been until this year since I've done any sort of international travel. So I have my own reservations about flying and whatnot, and so... Yeah, it's.
What was that like? How did you find out about it, first of all? You were in
Paris. I was in Paris. It was a school trip, and I was staying with a family as a part of that trip. And they were, watching news or, you know, woke me up sort of earlier than normal as I'm, you know, getting ready for breakfast or whatever. And called to my attention this story on TV or this or that. And it didn't click. I didn't quite get the story. So soon as they handed me a telephone, it was my parents calling. And it all happened right around the same time. I mean, I knew that this story was going on, and they had sort of been, you know, trying to explain it to me, but it didn't click until my mother was, like, ringing on the phone and said, Kyle, are you watching the news? Are you paying attention? In other words, the sentiment was in the air, but I wasn't getting it. Mm-hmm. And I actually did get a call at their house from my mother long distance, and she told me on the phone.
Yeah.
So it was interesting.
That must feel really weird just to know that that was your flight.
Yeah, especially since it was a mechanical issue at the time. I believe they found it was...
Now, did you notice anything about that plane that might be a little weird? you know, any noise, any kind of strangeness that might
nothing,
help the investigators
right,
figure
right.
this out after however many years this has been?
Right, right. No, I didn't notice anything at the time. I was quite young. I did take a couple pictures inside the plane. I don't know where that film has gone, but of, you know, friends I was traveling with and that sort of thing. But the plane, it got us there, obviously, and it was pretty nerve-wracking coming back. And so to have somebody joking in the customs line about weapons or whatnot is...
Wait, she made that joke after flight?
On the way back, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, okay, well, that's somebody...
She was a little older than I was, a little braver. But, you know, De Gaulle is interesting. It's like Frankfurt.
Well, I flew into De Gaulle. That's where I flew into.
You have military in the airport, large weapons. I believe you've talked about that before.
Yeah, they walk around with their large weapons.
It's different. You don't see that in the States.
No, you do now. You just see, see people patrolling with large weapons
true.
In airports.
All right, there you go.
And even in train stations sometimes. But, okay, let's fast forward ahead. Now,
yeah, please.
I flew
yeah.
into Paris this past December and met up with you,
mm-hmm.
who came from Germany. First, any experiences in Germany you want to share before we met up?
Yeah, I had to get my sea legs on the train system. I was trying to get to a hostel, and I had a mix-up for my destination on the train. I was trying to get to a hostel at the Malberg train stop, and I ended up on a train to Marburg, which is way out in the country.
Yeah, that can happen to Americans. They
yeah.
can easily wind up in the wrong... There's places called Hamburg. There's a place called
yeah.
Hamburg.
Yeah.
There's Frankfurt, Oder.
The important part is I recognized it.
Uh-huh. And how long did it take for you to recognize it?
I was almost there. And I asked a German gentleman if he could help me and you know, if I had noticed this correctly and how I might get on a train in the opposite direction. And he, you know, I was getting comfortable and, you know, I didn't know if I could transfer trains, this and that. So I asked him very distinctly, you know, is it okay if I take the opposite train? Will it run? That kind of thing. And he, you know, gave me sort of the courage I needed to quickly get off at the next stop and
run
head
like the wind,
in
Kyle.
The opposite direction. Yeah. Yeah. So then I got to the hostel there, and my first evening there, I had been told by some guys that were just outside the correct subway stop, the Malberg subway stop. They had been loading a beer bicycle onto a trailer, and I helped them, and they offered me a ride in exchange for the help.
Stop you right there. Now, you just
what?
Said a beer bicycle like
yeah,
everyone's going to know what a
yeah,
beer bicycle.
Bike.
What the hell is a beer bicycle?
Well, it's beer and a bike. That's it, you know.
It's a German thing.
Okay. Yeah.
You wouldn't understand.
I'll go into it, but yeah, maybe for another show.
It's okay. Well,
it's a whole world, these bicycles. We've got art bikes, beer bikes, and, you know, we could go on and on. But I helped them get the beer bike on the trailer. The important part is they you know, offered me this ride graciously to the hostel and suggested, you know, don't go to this section of town and spend money on food. It's Christmas time. Go to the Christmas market. That's where the activity is. And they told me, you know, precisely, you just cross here and go there. And so I checked into the hostel, and I was able to just walk across the bridge and head right into this Christmas market. It was surreal. It was everything you've ever sort of imagined about Christmas in a traditional, in a cultural way. Not the American, you know, big box sort of plastic Santa, bright colored lights. No, I'm talking like candles and the real like German tradition and that sort of beauty. And it was amazing to be walking around this small like village with wood shacks and amazing food, raclette and sausage, brats, all kinds of dried meats and cheeses, as well as crafts, little ornaments. You had whole booths that were devoted to every different type of accessory you might need for this year's manger scene.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, yeah. If you're, you know, you've got a small manger, you know, you keep in your front hallway, you can get little ladders and little saws and all these little teeny trinkets to make it. It's just like model trains, but a manger. And so they have all these booths.
HO scale.
Yes, exactly.
Or Lionel scale.
Lionel, I don't know. I think it was HO. It's real small. And, you know, so it's just amazing. They've got all these Christmas crafts and food and the smells. And it was here that I was introduced to glühwein.
And you introduced me to glue wine. I thought you were trying to like get me to sniff glue or something.
No, glue wine.
it's this hot wine that they sell at these Christmas markets. And
absolutely,
wow.
Well, I was poking around the market, and I brought a camera. I was trying to find good stuff to maybe photo or just whatever was going on. I wanted to be a part of. I wanted to try some of the food. It was just so beautiful. This natural glowing light and all these people milling and laughing, and everybody's got hats and gloves and just soaking up that winter energy. That was my MO. I had to do it all. So after eating, I think, a brat, one of these real big brats with a tiny bun, yeah, I was interested in what these people were drinking. They had mugs of this warm stuff, and I was saying, well, okay, but they sort of huddle around the booth where they get it, and boy, you'd have to kind of elbow your way in to get a place at the table, so to speak. So I'm, walking in, and I kind of heard some Americans talking to a woman from Tokyo, and they were being sort of really loud and American-like. And I figured, well, I'll sort of kind of eavesdrop and nudge my way in and maybe say, haha, I'm an American too, and see if I can drink some of this wine with them. So I go in, I purchase a little bit of this glue wine, which comes in a mug. You have to pay a deposit for the mug, and then the glue wine is maybe €2 a fill, and so you get 0.2 liters of the warm glue wine. I chose red glue wine. That was the first cup I had, and I, casually moseyed over to this couple that's talking and just soaked it up. I had my first cup of glue wine on my very first evening in Frankfurt.
Cold winter air.
It was beautiful, and I knew the trip was going to be amazing at that point. I knew this was the place. This was the year for me to have a totally different Christmas experience, unlike I'd ever had at home and with my family. They'd all sort of given me their blessings and said, go out, enjoy this trip, Kyle. And I really did, and I knew that was the best way to start it.
Now, we met up in Paris, where, in fact, we were able to track down some glue wine there as well on a Christmas market. But we happened to both show up right at the point where the Eurostar was having difficulty getting through the tunnel because of the severe cold. Apparently, mm-hmm. all these trains went in there, and they all failed at about the same time. But they had, I think, 5 trains stuck in the tunnel. And what happened was trains were canceled for a few days, and where I was staying, and where I met up with you, mm-hmm. Was right near Gare du Nord, which is one of the main train stations in Paris. And I was just walking around there, and the Eurostar people, the people who run that particular train, were trying to keep everybody in a good mood. And they were just serving croissants and coffee and all kinds of little snacks. And they just kind of, walked up to me and offered me this. And I wasn't going to say, oh, I'm not entitled to this because I'm not a Eurostar passenger. I had been a Eurostar passenger in the past, so I figured maybe why not? But it just became the center of attention. And by the time you arrived, every media outlet in Europe seemed to be there filming people that were either delayed or the next day finally on one of the first Eurostar trains to start running again.
Yeah, I was going to mention, it was a media event. By the time I met you, it was all over the news. It was quite a story. The fact that this amazing, high tech train was unable to complete its line or its run from from London to Paris, and mm-hmm. this is really unheard of in a lot of the European rail systems. Generally, these trains don't have any problems at all, and although, it's amazing if they're a minute or half a minute late at all.
But everybody complains about the trains in their country. Germany, they complain about the trains. France, they complain
absolutely.
About Holland.
Yeah.
Everybody says their trains are awful, and compared to America, their trains are amazing.
Yeah, keep in mind, from the American perspective, they're amazing. Everybody whose train lines these are, they've got something to say because it's their home country.
You can pick the smallest
just like
town
we
anywhere.
Have plenty of things to say about Amtrak and our own regional systems.
Yeah, but I'd be happy if there was more Amtrak service.
Sure.
In more places. You
absolutely.
Can pick any tiny town, almost any place around here, and get there by train somehow.
Oh gosh, yes! Don't we have stories?
It's incredible.
Oh, we went all over and enjoyed that.
Oh, we sure did.
Please.
In Paris.
Continue.
In Paris. Yeah, now we basically wandered around, walked down the Champs-Élysées, had an amazing time just taking in the sights, and of course food was amazing in Paris. You can't really do badly with that, can you?
Yeah, and the pace of the meals, the
3 hours, I believe, is standard for dinner.
Yeah, standard. The city itself, they want you to get into the hustle and bustle, and there's so much activity, and you get the sense that, well, gosh, am I doing enough? There's just people everywhere, doing. But as soon as you walk into a cafe or a restaurant, it slows incredibly. It's halved almost, and you really get to take your time and enjoy the meal.
For the customers, yes.
For the
staff.
Okay, correct.
It's a
madhouse. Staff. Yeah.
On Christmas Eve, we walked into this place that we had no hope of ever getting into because it was crowded, full of people. But they actually made an effort for us. They said, "Okay, wait here." We had to wait about 40 minutes, but it was worth it. I mean, we wound up just in the middle of this huge throng of people, very festive. Very relaxed, and the food, of course, was amazing, as it always is.
Absolutely, and it's a testament to being patient. It's not a typically American thing to do. We just waited, and it was Christmas Eve, and it wasn't the right way to be, to sort of expect someone to drop everything for you, and just being patient and waiting for them to find a spot. And they really did. I think the host he kept kind of giving us the nod and kept us.
Yeah, he knew we were
there.
He knew,
yeah. He kind of gave us the impression, yo, I'm going to take care of you. It's fine. I'll find something for you because it's Christmas. And that was just amazing. We were able to get a spot, just as I sort of hoped, deep in the back, next to everyone.
And we found this place, like we found most other places, by looking for a different place that we either couldn't find or that was closed. And simply walking around and looking for some place where a lot of people were that seemed to have a good ambiance to it. And it seemed to work out just about every time we tried it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's also great that you don't have to leave tips if you unless you want to add something to the service that's already included.
Yeah, the French, they include all service gratuity and that sort of thing, and take care of you in much the same way you'd expect, at any place where you'd be giving that tip.
And the wine.
Oh, the wine.
No, I mean, do you want more wine? Because
I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Have,
yeah. Please. Maybe we should.
Another bottle here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's crack open this one. There we go. That's fine stuff. And some for me as well. A little more.
Yeah. I think you need a little more. You're doing a good job here.
All right.
This is it.
Gonna need a few more bottles.
There we go. All right.
Another thing, we were there for a few days and just able to sort of figure out the metro system. Actually, there was one point, I think, where we had trouble with the metro system, right, where we couldn't get out or something. we couldn't get in and we couldn't get out. We had two problems. We bought these...
Well, the cards themselves you need to retain until you actually fully exit the system.
Sometimes, not all the time.
Well, yeah, it's not...
And the cards are little tiny cards. Really tiny, like stiff little cards.
It's OBA.
Yeah, with little strips in the middle of them.
Yeah, they're about half the size of a pack of gum or something.
Yeah, it's like that. They've been
very
around forever.
Skinny. Yeah, it's a very old technology. It's got a mag stripe down the center. And, you use them to get in and out of the system.
Like I said, sometimes. Not always.
Well, yeah, not always.
Because when we went to the place with all the buildings, which is one of the most scenic parts of Paris, that's actually outside of one of the zones that you get a ticket for. So technically, you should be paying more to go there. But fortunately, they don't have... At least the part we went out, they don't have the doors that you have to go through and show your ticket. You just walk out. But other stops, like Gare du Nord, you do have to show your ticket. And
They have a much more closed system at some of the bigger stops, it seems.
Right.
I mean, it seems that way.
And also sometimes you have to transfer from one train to another, and you wind up using your ticket to go from one train to the other. So
twice.
It's like you're sort of in the system, and then you're in the system doubly.
Right, so can you use it a third time? I don't know.
We couldn't figure it out.
It felt like we were constantly learning and it's constantly trying to pick up more information, but never getting any sort of definitive rules about how, other than the fact that it is a constant learning process.
I mean, New York is not complicated. People who say New York is complicated, you've got to go to Paris and see how complicated it is. I mean, you remember the trains. The trains come down the track and they have... letters on the front that don't pertain to the letter of the route or where the train is going. It's just a random, it seems like a random string of letters that identify the actual train.
Yeah, and only sometimes it lists the final destination, but you always get this code that really seems to have no sort of base in logic or anything to do with the line
there.
Or the train. Or,
you get where you're going eventually. It does work. But on the second day, somehow, we bought, I think, 10 tickets. You can get a discount. You get a whole bunch of little tiny tickets.
La Carnet.
Yeah, you remember these things.
Mm-hmm.
And on the second day, none of them worked.
That's right.
We tried to use them, and none of them went through. So we were wondering, do they only last for a day? You have to use them all in a day? It didn't seem right. There was something about that just did not seem right.
The other thing we suspected is possible demagnetizing.
You had a BlackBerry or something.
It's a holster for some, uh-huh. some sort of BlackBerry or another, and and I'm fairly sure that at some point these 10, maybe you brushed up against me or, bumped into me with that pocket that had all 10, but I think they all got demagnetized.
Yeah.
Because, it didn't seem to work at all.
Something bad happened, that's true. And then we tried buying a ticket through a ticket machine, and that didn't go well at all because apparently the ticket machines don't take American credit cards. They only take the cards with chips on them.
Right, they take credit cards, but not traditional American ones just a mag strip. They need a chip.
They only take coins. Is that right? They only take coins or they only take – no, they only took coins. And we had bills.
They took bills, but what was happening is some of these were broken.
Well, yeah, a lot of them were broken.
Like, entirely.
Uh-huh.
That was the main problem. I do believe we were able to use euros in the French machines.
Uh-huh.
It was more recently in Poland where we were only to use coins.
We were never in Poland. Boy, you need a rest.
Oh. I'm sorry. We didn't get to Poland. No, Czech. Czech only used coins, but I'm certain that in France...
I know we had a lot. We were at that ticket machine for a good 20 minutes going back and forth, trying to figure things out, taking notes, passing notes back and forth to each other, seeing what we could learn about these machines.
Yeah.
And debating whether or not we should just go to the human.
But there was at least...
half a mile away.
There was at least three of them. They'd have clusters of six machines, and at least three would be broken.
Right.
You'd have to go to the machine where there was three people queued up, ready to use it to actually get your ticket, if it worked at all. And then the best solution is talking to a human. And
we eventually got through, and later on we actually went to a human and said, look, these tickets don't work. Can you do something for us? And he just gave us new tickets.
Yeah.
So that worked.
He took the carnet, the remainder of the carnet.
But then there came a time where you threw out your ticket before you left. I think you thought you had left the system, but you actually hadn't left the system. You left half the system.
Right.
And you still had to go through one more barricade, and you didn't have a ticket. So I was outside, but you were inside still. I think that was how it worked.
Yes.
And we had to figure out how to get you. How did we get
you? You passed me a twice-used or single-used BA, and it was folded as well, and I was able to use that to get out.
Was it a floor ticket, one we found on the floor, or was it one?
You know what? It could have been a floor. Yeah. Let's just say it's a floor ticket.
Okay, yeah. So I think anything, as long as you have some kind of ticket, you can get out of the system.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Paris was fun. Paris, I'd do it again.
Paris was a good time.
But from Paris, we went on to the CCC Congress, which we did a number of shows from in Berlin, and we took the train directly from Paris to Berlin. And that was fun. It was kind of late, though. For some reason, our train was late. We had to get on a different train. And while we were getting on that different train at one of the stations, we witnessed the German police basically taking into custody a couple of people that were from Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And we overheard them saying that. They're very polite and civil and calm, but the guys that they were taking into custody just seemed kind of I don't know exactly how to describe it. It was sort of like an expression like they'd been through this 100 times before, or they were just really kind of, I don't want to say cocky, but like confident, that this wasn't going to go anywhere. They didn't seem nervous or upset.
Kind of blasé, rolling their eyes, almost like they expected it.
But what was weird was there were two of them, and they weren't together, but they apparently were traveling together, even though they were on different parts of the platform.
Right.
That's what I got out of it anyway.
Yeah, they were separate, but they kind of oddly enough looked like they were, sort of family or friends.
Yeah, I'm wondering how the cops knew they were there, how they tracked them down, and what happened afterwards. So that was, of course, that was after the December 25th incident in the States.
Well,
so maybe it was related to that, maybe not.
The last we saw was, you know, both cops sort of grabbing each by the arm and leading them off to probably speak with them further in
an office.
Yeah,
not violently, just firmly.
Just very firmly. They didn't want them, getting away or, you know, kind of wandering off or thinking that this was less serious than it was. They had business with them.
Those are the things you see while you travel. We witnessed this, and then we got on our other train, and then we were supposed to have a connection at another point, but that connection didn't wait for us, so we had to get on the train after that and head into Berlin that way. So, you know, it's a bit of a misconnections, I guess. Didn't quite go according to plan, but it was still a smooth ride. We, you know, were comfortable the whole way. And then Berlin. We wound up in Berlin, went to the CCC Congress, which was an amazing thing. You want to say anything about that, your first one?
Oh, wow. The CCC Congress was really incredible. I'd never been to Germany and Berlin, no less, so it was a really good time. We arrived a couple days early and got to, you know, get settled, kind of meet with some old friends, get registered the night before, which was important because the event itself gets sold out.
Yeah.
This has been a very popular event, and in fact, this was the first year they recommended streaming. And,
yeah, they encouraged people not to come.
Don't come.
Yeah.
But we went and we got our wristbands and got all settled in. We're able to even hang out, I think, the night before and just sort of meet a couple faces before the conference even began. People just, they come in, they bring their gear. A lot of them don't stay anywhere but at the conference. It is the reason they're in Berlin. They'll come from all over and, you know, settle in, bring their computer, bring whatever they need to kind of survive and take, you know, take a bird bath in the sink and
hey,
just...
See people arriving with all this gear... And they're just going into the building. They go downstairs where all the computers are set up, and they just pretty much live there.
Yeah. I got to meet a couple people. We walked around a bit after we got there, and just, I believe, it was a young guy, 17 years old even, in line, waiting to register, had never been to any sort of hacker event, any kind of congress at all, and was there for the first time, wanting to get integrated and involved. And, I mean, that's the kind of, you see young faces, people that have never been involved in anything like this before, all the way to people that, you know, have put on their own events and are there to just share in the experience, you know, because they've been involved for quite a while and want to, you know, meet and you know, reconnect with people they already know. And that was the feeling I got. A lot, at least, you know, four or five guys I had seen at my first foreign camp, which was Haar, a lot of the German and the Dutch guys were there at CCC,
yep.
And I expected it. I had been told that they would probably be there, and I didn't know exactly who, but it was really nice to have that sense that, oh, yeah, I remember you. Hey, Kai, you know, how are you doing? And you just got to reconnect and just, what, you know, drink and you know, have a conversation over a mate or you know, some German lager, and there you go. And it's just right back in the same group having interesting conversations on all kinds of topics. It wasn't just, you know, guys hunched over keyboards, although there's a fair amount of computers and technical stuff going on. You know, it could just be a conversation about cars or model train sets, and or, you know, just interesting art or jewelry that people are making. You know, things that glow, things that light up, circuitry, all kinds of hardware hacking, you know, interesting political conversations, the state of the world, where things are going, you know, what kind of, how these movements are shaping. A lot about hackerspaces. Recently, we've been hearing all kinds of cool projects, and, you know, you hear, it's not just one new city, it's like you hear three or four new cities coming onto the hackerspace landscape. They've got a space here, and then you hear a space there. It's incredible. It seems like there's very soon you won't be able to go to a country without it having its very own hacker space. There will no longer be a country that does not have one of these wonderful places for people to go. So that's just a sample of it, of what I saw over the course of the conference. I did get to a couple talks I stayed up, some nights stayed up, some nights caught up on a little sleep, but it all balanced out, and it was really quite a bit of fun. And distinct from the camp setting, the urban setting was really nice. It was sort of like a trade show, but not at all like a trade show or a business conference. It had its own flair, but the BCC, I believe, BCC?
Yeah, Berlin Conference Center.
They take care of the CCC guys so well. They have such a good rapport and relationship. You feel like some sort of first-class executive, even though, you're just a teenager trying to, share ideas and work on code or learn about something. You get to get catered, there's wonderful food that, you have available and just good fun all around.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have anything.
Well, I mean, it's amazing how they're able to pull it off year after year and have the same basic aura to it. And that, of course, it's matched by what's going on outside, too, just the overall scenery of Berlin, which is very different from other places that we're used to. So it's very nice to be able to just sort of wander in and out from one environment to the other and know that you have a lot of people there that you're friends with and can communicate with. So it's a great highlight of any winter travel to Europe. Since we're talking about the various places we've been to, Berlin, how do you feel about that city, especially as related to Paris?
Wow. Berlin had much less in the way of tall buildings. However, Paris does not have a lot of tall buildings around the city itself. It has a district which is sort of distinct in that that's the only place in Paris where you can have tall buildings. Berlin itself, there's no such rule, but it's very spread out, it's very large, and there's not a heck of a lot of skyscrapers. It's a very old city. It's got that historical feel to it, but at the same time, it's quite modern. It's got a lot of business going on. I really liked hearing from you a little bit of the perspective east versus west. I don't know that I would have seen as much of the sort of eastern architecture. I'm talking like modern Eastern, not historic architecture, which in and of itself is distinct and very unique and beautiful. But I wouldn't have gotten the sense of that. Okay, this is a western side of Berlin, and this is what was East Berlin. When I was traveling, and you would point things out here and there, I really was able to say, "Oh, wow, that's absolutely right." This is a part of town where you get the sense there wasn't a lot of like that capitalist, unique kind of, we can, do whatever we want, build whatever we want. It was sort of uniformity, a sort of long buildings with, many rooms, but it's, maybe five or six levels high and three blocks long, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, it was really interesting to sort of soak that up and also just explore it with the impressive train system they've got there.
Oh, yeah,
It's like Paris, but distinct as well. You've got the regional trains, which feel slightly more integrated, mm-hmm. Slightly more overlapping, as well as the trams. I mean, that whole... there's a lot more depth, I think, to the transit system. I feel like the regional trains go zooming through just as much as the underground system works, and then you've got trams running around the streets, sort of, keeping the cars at bay. So it's very people friendly, and you feel like you can get absolutely anywhere without having to huff and puff and run up and down blocks.
And we did get spread everywhere. We wandered all over the place. In fact, New Year's we did the whole thing. I've done 3 years now in a row where I stay up all night long and just sort of wander around the city and wait for my hotel room to become available again so that I can save spending 300 euros for one night on New Year's, because the rates go way up on that particular day. Basically, what we did was we went to a New Year's celebration, which there's no shortage of.
It was really fun.
Everybody in town is blowing things up. And, in the States, we're kind of shocked by this. But it's not something you see very often in other parts of the world. Basically, you can just go to the corner store, buy all these fireworks, and just spend the night lighting them off one after the other. Everyone's having a great time. Everyone's shooting things and throwing firecrackers into... They literally throw firecrackers into crowds of people, which is kind of weird.
You had warned me about that. You had been giving me, you know, the days before, you know, CCC, and then during CCC, you had given me sort of the heads up, there will be explosions, or we would hear one off in the distance.
There will be an explosion here or there,
and, you know, watch out when we walk through Alexanderplatz. There might be, you know, some punk kids throwing things here or there, and... Mm-hmm. You warned me about this, and then we slowly got into, okay, New Year's Eve after the conference, and we were walking, and we managed to go and get some fireworks at is basically, you know, a corner store, and they sort of put up a poster and start selling the fireworks. And that night was amazing. It just blew up, and it was a roar of fireworks, and I was actually welcoming this overnight walk to just sort of walk around and get some fresh air after this huge... crescendo of explosions and light and all this fun. And, you know, early on in the walk, it was nice to see the people just sort of stumbling from whatever party they'd gotten to, and their friendly German neighbor sort of getting them on the tram and saying, well, okay, now where are you going? We're on the tram, you know, where's your stop? That kind of thing. Just that camaraderie, like, oh, it's okay, we're all celebrating together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took that tram ride, and we got onto the regional train. We were going to kind of jet around and figure out what we would do to spend, you know, the early hours, 4 or 5
in
the morning.
About 6 or 7 hours.
Yeah, this was about from 4 on in the morning, mm-hmm. you know.
We had already been up all day, and all night, so
jeez.
Another 6 or 7 hours to go before we can check into a hotel and go to sleep.
Right.
And so what do? We get on a regional train, and we wind up going directly the opposite way we're supposed to be going.
Yeah, I believe we went the opposite way. And, mm-hmm. and didn't you say you knew where we were going on that train?
I did, but we weren't going there. We went a different direction.
Yeah,
I thought we
went the wrong way.
Yeah. And then what happened was we decided, okay, we're going to get off the train then and wait for a train going the other direction.
And that was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was such an amazing space because, you know, here we had been in this huge, like, almost... war reenactment of blowing things up to, you know, going deep into the suburbs.
Complete silence. And it wasn't that
just
far out.
Nothing.
It was maybe 10 stops on the equivalent of a subway.
It felt really suburban, you know, low buildings,
no,
but
it
houses.
No, it felt more than that because there were no sounds.
Right, but I mean, like, European suburban.
Yeah, no,
like,
lights, no sounds.
Not American suburban. Mm-hmm. Deep into the outer parts of town.
And it was cold, and we were standing outside on this platform waiting for our train
dark.
To come. And other trains would pass by as we were waiting.
Yes.
Not ours.
Oh, I remember. I was standing there. You were looking at the old signal board for what train is going where.
Yeah, there's some kind of weird...
Mechanical
sign system that basically it would flip down and say Alexanderplatz. It would say Berlin, which, of course, is part of... Alexanderplatz is part of that. I don't know if it was functional, but basically it seemed to be something that would indicate where the next train was going.
So we're walking around, and I'm off, you know, on the other side, sort of trying to keep warm, kicking snow around, and just sort of amazed at the silence. I was, you know, just thrilled with it. And looking at sort of this old station, I heard it coming. And off in the distance, just, this train's just barreling in. And you know it's on an outside track. You know it's going to fly right by. So I run to that side of the platform. And here it comes. It's a huge DB engine barreling on the outside of the track with a string of freight cars behind it, just hauling all this, you know, this shipping, all this stuff, just hauling it very quickly past, and shoop, it goes by, and all this frost and snow just flies up in your face. It was the biggest thrill ever. I was so happy at, you know, at 5 in the morning to get this blast of cold air and just to see the harsh, this cold industry fly by. You know, it's the speed of the world and globalization. Everything that's happening that needs to happen, no matter what. It's New Year's Eve. It doesn't matter. This train's got to get where it's going. It was just a thrill and really kicked off the night of just finding cool stuff to see and to experience.
Folks, we are not typical tourists because this is not something that's on the list of what to do while in Berlin. But, yeah, we had a blast staying up all night just wandering around and seeing freight trains go by and being cold and exploring. And we went back into Berlin after that, and we actually...
Speaking of cold, we were
cold. It was freezing. It really was very cold. But
and I'm really glad you had this idea at Hauptbahnhof to track down the U-55.
U-55 being, well, this is what happened a couple of years ago, actually, on Off the Wall. I talked about wandering around the Hauptbahnhof station trying to find the missing tracks. I think there was track 1 through 8 were the upper tracks, and tracks 11 through 16 were the lower tracks. So I was wondering where tracks 9 and 10 were. And I literally walked around for hours trying to figure out where these missing tracks existed. And nobody bothered me. I was able to just simply keep plodding around. It killed a lot of time back then because I was trying to do the same thing, kill 6 or 7 hours. And eventually I figured out that it was a future U-Bahn, which is the equivalent of the subway, an U-Bahn line that had not yet opened that would take those tracks. And that particular U-Bahn line would be called the U-55, but it hadn't opened until August of this year. And I'm happy to say we found the U-55 and we took the U-55. Very unique
line. You pointed
line.
It out. I remember you pointed it out on the map. You said, there it is.
Yeah, it was on the map.
A little two dots and a brown line in between.
Yeah, it wasn't there last year.
Maybe an inch.
Yeah. So that's exciting to me. You know, I know a lot of people would never care about this, but yeah, looking at this, it exists. The U-55 is there now, so we have to see the U-55. So how can you go to Berlin and not see the U-55?
Right. We knew one end would be at Hauptbahnhof, right? I mean,
yeah.
So there we go. You know, Hauptbahnhof. All right, walk around. It's a big station. We walk, you know, from the third level down to the second level. You know, I mean, obviously the first level, maybe the sign isn't visible. And so we come back up, I believe, from the first level. We looked at all the levels. We were really trying to find where this line was. And I think we just instinctively knew there, down that corridor. And it was the sign where you would get, you know, tracks 9, track 10. Mm-hmm. The sign where the tracks were labeled was just blacked out. I distinctly remember it was black.
Mm-hmm.
It was not labeled very distinctly, nothing like that. But we knew somehow that this
well,
is
I
where
knew
the
somehow
line was.
Because
yeah.
I had been there before, and I knew that that's where the train
well,
was.
Well, no, and I had a feeling, okay, you know, let's just, if we've tried every other part of Hauptbahnhof, it's got to be down this hallway. And so we sort of went. And boy, was that interesting. They had an art installation with the Berlin Bears, which you see all over Berlin. And basically, each bear is a representation of every country of the world.
It's like the cows that New York used
Absolutely
to have, these
cow.
Big, giant cows. They have big, giant bears in New York and Berlin.
So we checked out every bear and walked through there. And you sort of listened to hear when this U-55 might roll up, which was another short escalator down. So we managed to make our way around the bears, and then we go down, and here comes this bright orange, brand new train. I think it was two cars. Brand new, shiny, brand new paint job. Oh, it was beautiful. And the station itself, the starting point for U-55 was at Hauptbahnhof, and it was this corridor and brand new section. You could tell everything was pristine, just installed, you know, absolutely brand new. We go down the escalator, we sort of poked around, and here comes this orange train. There it is. It's ready. And the driver goes from one end of the train, moseys out, and you get the sense he does this all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, this is his line, and nobody's, you know, really, you know, riding it, you know, all day, every day. It's not that busy yet. So he sort of just has the car to himself, and he just goes from one end to the other every time he reaches the opposite end.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's secure, I guess. You know what you're doing. You drive your little train back and forth. Was it two stops or three stops? Was there a middle stop?
One stop.
Well, obviously on each one end. Stop. One stop on each end.
No so, middle
yeah.
stop.
And there's
so
a schedule.
Why not join him? You know.
Yeah, there was a list of all the stations, and you know, usually for a list of stations, you have a. You know, room for 20 or 30 stations, but there are only two on top of this this board where the U-55 was listed. It looked kind of silly. A lot of space for expansion, and it will expand in the future. It just wasn't
right. That's not the permanent the length of it.
No.
That's just as far as they've gotten, and it
for now,
its origin is at Hauptbahnhof.
And when you get to the other station, you basically see the history of Brandenburg Gate. And the wall and all kinds of things. You can read
it
on the
it's
sides.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, so
it
we stayed
so
there,
gorgeous.
And the train kept coming and going, coming back, and you know, we saw the guy going back and forth doing his thing. And we were fascinated reading the wall, And
that's right. Each side of the platform had a mural, and you were able to sort of walk to one end, and I would have the exact same mural on the other end.
Right.
And it told the entire story of Brandenburg Gate up until the Berlin Wall falling, and it was just an amazing way to spend a couple hours alone in this brand new station. Well, they're literally just...
Did we spend a couple of hours doing that?
Okay, a hour, but
yeah,
it was,
maybe 1 hour, maybe less, a little less than an hour. But we were reading that, we were having a great time, killing time, and just learning something about history.
Could have easily been a couple hours.
Yeah, well, we could have stretched it, I think. But we eventually
maybe
left.
When they add a couple stops, it'll be a couple hours.
Yeah,
it'll be more stuff, more
well,
beautiful.
Next time, we'll check out the other stops too. But we eventually left the station, and
that was amazing.
Oh wow! Because we didn't know what to expect when we left the station.
We had no idea where you would walk out onto ground level.
Mm-hmm.
So we went up an escalator, went around a corner, and then up another set of stairs. And, you know, you just slowly see the Brandenburg Gate right in front of you.
Yeah.
Lit up. It must have been 5 or 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
And there it is. Right in front of your face.
And, of course, that was the center of activity for Berlin for New Year's, Brandenburg Gate.
That's their more commercial celebration.
Millions of people, concert, I think, were just gathered for that. And, of course, that was over. Everybody was asleep at this point. You could hear occasional artillery in the background of people blowing things up still, but not nearly as much.
Mainly cleanup.
Mainly cleanup, yeah. So we stumbled around up in that section, walked around Tiergarten for a while, just basically killed a lot of time and took in a lot of scenery. Found the old synagogue in the eastern part of the city.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, when we finally crashed, we crashed good.
We slept absolutely
straight
through. Nobody was getting up or stirred at all.
We divided it into two parts. Two parts.
True.
Like two nights of sleep in one night. We basically had, I think, 8 hours, got up. We went and got dinner somewhere, and then we went back to sleep, and it was. And then the next day, we're back on a morning schedule, so it kind of works out.
It did. It was amazing. You had predicted it, and I it didn't quite register, mm-hmm. but we immediately synced up to this relatively what you might say normal mm-hmm. European sleep schedule, which was great for the rest of the trip. We had a lot of other activities at that point. I think we were sort of itching to move on from Berlin. We'd seen all this cool history and been at the conference, of course, and shared a lot of good meals and just a good time having fun with people.
But we wanted to move on and do something different.
Something a little different. Now, you had suggested Poland. I mentioned Poland earlier. We almost ended up going to Poland.
Almost went to Poland.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
We will go to Poland at some point. It's calling to us. But what seemed a little more reasonable or relevant at the time was, why not just head to Prague?
Yeah, and the Czech Republic. Because we had a couple other places we wanted to go to in that region, and Prague was closer to that. And, of course, winding up back in Frankfurt, Prague was more in that general vicinity. So, spur of the moment, we decided, let's go to Prague. We went to Hauptbahnhof, got ourselves some train tickets, found the train, got on the train, and before we knew it, we were on our way to Prague.
Yeah, it was very no-nonsense. Worked out really well.
And that's going to just about do it for us here tonight on Off the Wall. Next week, be sure to tune in to find out what happened in Prague.
Yeah, Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB. Stony Brook tonight. Stay tuned for some giveaways to some shows in Brooklyn, New York. Circle of Buzzards, which includes members of Fiery Furnaces and Sebado, and some movies. So stay tuned right here to WUSB Stony Brook.
drinking from a well. Moses had thought he was Jesus. Moses had just got back from hell. When he took his tablets out, the birds began to sing. Wasn't this a lovely dish to set before the king? For Jesus did not and does not and will not slay any person. Mushroom.